Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Gimel with Aleph, two lines down. The Gemara here is continuing the discussion from the Mishnah, which the Gemara had a fundamental question on why we don't say Nevatel Biruba. Why don't we say that whatever Isur is found in the Mishnah is Batel Birov? So the Gemara then bifurcated the din and said, Anicha, the Mandamar, works well according to the one who says that anything that is enumerated, that means that it's sold by number at some point, whether that's the majority of the time or even some of the time, as long as it's sometimes sold by number, even though there are other times where it's sold by flock, by corral, by herd, or any other measure. Nevertheless, since at some point it is sold in that manner, it has significance to it. And since it has significance, it's not batel. And that was the view of Reish Lakish. And according to Reish Lakish, the Mishnah is understandable. We're speaking about animals that are sometimes sold by number, or even maybe the majority of the time are sold by number. And given that, they're too chashuv, too significant in order to be batel. And that's the reason in the Mishnah they're not batel. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, it says that the only time we say that something is significant because it's sold by volume is when that's the exclusive manner in which it's sold. The item is so significant that nobody would sell it in a bundled package, because it's too significant. And so therefore, in this case, where animals are sometimes sold, not by volume, not by number, but by herd, flock, corral, whatever it is, the measure that they're using besides the actual quantity of animals, that shows you that it's not an exclusive way to sell or transact with the animal. And that means that it's not considered to be significant. So for Rabbi Yochanan, we have a problem because the Mishnah seems to indicate that there is no bitul over here. And why is it that there's no bitul if you're speaking about animals? Animals are chashuvim. That seems to be the reason that it's not batel. But what is the reason behind that they are chashuvim? According to Reish Lakish, it's because they're sold sometimes by volume or by quantity, by number. But for Rabbi Yochanan, where that's not a reason to be considered significant, and it's not amongst the list of items that the Chachamim say are so significant that they cannot be batel, then what's the reason in our Mishnah that it is not batel? So the Gemara in the end said that Rabbi Yochanan thinks that the author of our Mishnah, or the attribution of authorship to our Mishnah, is based on the Tana de Litraot. That's what we ended up with yesterday, that called the Var Sheish Bo Minyan, anything that has a number associated with it, as Rashi translates that for us over here, Kol Shadar Kol Limanot, Kalal, meaning that anything that is counted at all, meaning that if there's a numerator or has a volumetric sale that is associated with it, even though that's not all the time, or even the majority of the time, nevertheless, if it's sold by number or quantity at some point, then afilu b'derabanan lo batil, even if we're dealing with surei derabanan, it's not batel. And Kol Shekein, when we're dealing here in our Mishnah with dinim de'oraita, it's not going to be batel. So here, when you have the shor niskal, they get mixed up with 10,000 other animals of kodoshim, or you have a chatata meita, getting mixed up with 10,000 other kodoshim, they're going to cause a problem for all of those animals, even though technically it should be batel berov and there shouldn't be any issue. Problem is that the item is too significant. Too significant here, as Rabbi Yochanan says, based on this Tana, not that necessarily we hold like that Tana, but the authorship of this Mishnah will be associated with the position that we're going to see in the upcoming Braita, and that'll be a dat yachid as far as our Mishnah is concerned. But Rabbi Yochanan thinks otherwise, and there are other Tanaim that support his position. And Ein Ochanami, in the Mishnah, it should have said Batel Barov, according to Rabbi Yochanan. The Tanya, and this is the Braita that Marina was assuming, the Tano in this Braita is the author of our Mishnah. Litra Tziot. Litra is a measure. Tziot are dried out figs. The way that they dried out the figs was they used to cut off the stems. They used to leave them out in the sun, in the muksa, and that's where the term muksa comes from on Shabbat. I mean that they were put away. Nobody looked at them. They go through a stage where they rot a little bit, and then afterwards they dry out in the sun, and then you get the dried fruit, which in their day without refrigeration was the only way to store it for the longer term. So they used to do that in sizes of a litra. So they take a litra of tziot, and they would dry them out. Then once they were dried out, they would bring them in, and then shedarsa al pi ha'igul. Then they used to combine them, take a number of litrot, and then combine them together. They were almost like cakes of jelly, teinim yaveshim, these dried out figs, and then they used to press them together until they formed a larger cake, which is an igul vela. That large cake was, as Rashi comes over here, similar to a wheel of cheese. It was big, significant, and it was all pressed together. Now, even when it was pressed together, Rashi claims that you could still cut away that litra from it, because those breaks or those little pieces that were the litrot that made up the whole thing were still somewhat identifiable in it, even though they were not necessarily easily discernible, but as you broke it apart, it would break along those lines, and you would get a litra that comes away from it. So here they were pressing these figs, these already dried out figs, into this igul devela. So they use a kli called an igul, which is a large circular kli. As Rashi says over here, the kli had a lot of room in it. That means that at the base of the kli, you could put one down and then another one next to it, another one next to it, and then you could put on top of it. And so you could build up until you pressed, packed them into this kli, and that created the gigul tevela, which was of significant size. But this individual, that first, before they put them into the tevela below, used to be doraced them in order to get the dried figs to have that jelly-like feel to them where they can then be combined with the other tainim there. You have to work them first or crush them or smush them first. What they did was they were dorsal pia yigul on the mouth of the kli that where they were going to press them. They pressed it down on the mouth or around the mouth. And after they were already soft, then they would combine them down below with the others that are below. And slowly they built it up. The only problem is here is that it was of truma. The one on top that he did around the mouth of the igul over here was of truma. The rest of it was chulin. But now he has a problem. He has truma mixed in with the chulin. How does that truma affect all of those igulim that are there? Not only the kli on which it is found, but also the other kelim that are there. Because it turns out, he doesn't know on which of these kelim he did it. So you have a lot of kelim sitting there. Down below, they have this jellied or pressed tainim that are at the bottom building up to this bigger wheel of dvela. And on top, they also have pressed ones which are prepped to then be put down below. But there are a number of these kelim sitting out there. They're working on a number of them at the same time. So you have a number of them on top which have this litra that's pressed around them. And you have a number of them, including the ones where they're pressed around the top, where they have litrot that are down below. So he did the same thing, al pi akavit. He was pressing it around the mouth of a cask or a flask, venudei beizu kavit, and he didn't know which one it was done on. Darsal pi kaveret. He did it on top of kaveret, loosely translated in the Gemara as a beehive. But over here, a kaveret means a wicker basket that was shaped like a beehive. Venudei beizu kaveret darsal. He doesn't know on which one he did it at the top. So over here we're going to have a two-way machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who are bringing another machloket between Rabbi Lez and Rabbi Yeshua. And they're going to explain the machloket in the following manner. Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Lezer Omer. Lezer says, Ro'im et elyonot ki ilu hein prudot. We look at the upper ones as if they are separate or distinct. V'atachtonot malot et elyonot. And then the bottom ones affect the top ones. So it's a little hard through the language to understand this. Rashi, in explaining it, says, ki ilu hein prudot. We look at them as if they're all mixed together. We look at them as everything is one big unit over here. Both those that are on top and those that are at the bottom. Everything is one big unit. And then we say, is there enough kulin here to override the truma? Generally, when it comes to truma, as we discussed yesterday, it's 100 to 1. So if you have 100 times the kulin that you have the truma, then it would be batel. So that was what Rabbi Eliezer is makil over here, which is saying that it's all mixed together. Now he's only makil, not machmir, which means that he looks at the truma on top as if it's down below amongst all the kelim there, meaning everything on top and below is all together. And we see if there's 100 times of kulin for this one little ring of truma that's there. If there is, then it'll be batel. If not, it would not be batel. But in the other way around, if we do not have sufficient to make it 100 to 1, then what's on top will be asur. What's down below will not be asur. Because that's down below is considered to be distinct and separate, and therefore it'll remain chulin. The safek is only about the tops that are around. Lekula, he says, that we look at the bottom as if it's mixed with the top and helps it to be batel. But if it's not batel, then we won't allow the top then to make the bottom asur. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Im yesh mea pumim yalu. If there are 100 mouths, meaning if there are 100 of these rings around the mouth where they're pressing them on top to outweigh the one of truma, then it'll be batel. Bim lava pumim asurim. Otherwise, all the mouths, all the things, the rings around the top are asurim. In essence, what he says is that there is a divide between that which is on top and that which is on the bottom. And that's the kula and the chumra. Meaning that on top, it only looks at top, and therefore anything that's a sur is only going to be on top. That which is down below, everybody agrees there's no truma down there, and it'll be considered chulin. The other hand, he's a chumra, which he doesn't allow the stuff down below to help you to be mevatel the stuff on top. So even though they're concepts separate, so the bottom is chulin, the top now does not have as much quantity or volume to be mevatel it. Only the tops of all the kelim, you have to count. If you have 101 kelim there, then you're okay, because then you have 100 mouths of chulin, that will be outweighing this one of truma. If you don't have that, then the rings around all the mouths up top will be dimua. It'll be a mix of truma and chulin. You have to take those out, separate them, and deal with them as mixes of truma. Although the stuff down below will still be okay. That is the view, or the machloket, Rabbi Lez and Rabbi Yeshua, according to Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says their machloket is in the following manner. Rabbi Eliezer Mer Mish Sham Kuf Pumim Yalu. He says that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is similar to Rabbi Yeshua's opinion in Rabbi Meir. So that which Rabbi Meir says is the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Bimlava Pumim Asurim Vechule, and it's a repeat of that previous line in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yeshua Mer Afilu Yesham Shlosha Meot Pumim Lo Yalu. Even if you have 300 tops there, which means it's 300 to 1 or 299 to 1, it's not mitvatel it. So Rashi explains to us why. He believes that these are things that are considered to be separate or unique or sold by quantity or by unit, similar to what Reish Lakish said. And therefore, according to this, it would be something that is not batel because it is chashuv. So that was the reference we had before that the Gemara said, this is Tana Delitraot. Tana Delitraot is Rabbi Yoshua's opinion according to Rabbi Yehuda. Where he says that when you have more than 100 mouths on top, it's still not batel, because the item is too significant. As Rashi says, people still, even after they cake it together and make it into a wheel or an igul of the vela, they still will sell a unique piece of a litra, especially when the litra is separate on top. They will still sell it as a litra, and since it has a status as being something of significance, you can't be batel it, and therefore there is no bitul over here, according to Rabbi Yoshua. All right, we're just going to finish off the bright, and then we'll come and discuss some of the nuanced points here. Darsa be'igul, ve'en yodeo be'ezem makom be'igul. So if he pressed it down into the igul, the circle below, and he doesn't know where he did it, he has no idea where in the wheel that he's making down below, where he's pressing them all together, he has no idea where he did it. Olet zvona, olet roma, in the north or the south, divrei akol yalu. Even Rabbi Yeshua here will agree that it is malet. As Rashi explains over here, ho'il velete isurei be'enei, since the Isur is not apparent anymore, as opposed to what Rashi said before, when it said Alpia Chavit, when it was on the top of the Chavit, over there it was Davka Nakat Shinirei Ta'ayin, because there it's visible to the eye, it's separate, segregated, and for that reason it takes on a Chashivut. And that's why Rabbi Yeshua says over there that it's not Batel. But over here, where it's mixed in to the actual item, and let the Isurei Be'enei, we can no longer identify the Isur separately, even though in the ratio we couldn't identify it, but we knew it was one of the tops of the Kelim. Over here we can't even identify it because it's mixed in down below in one of these placements. It's all mixed up. Enka davar should be minyan klal, and therefore it no longer has a status as being a minyan because it's now all stuck together and pressed together. But according to that reading, there's only one safek over here, which is that you had it in one side of one of these igulim, but it's mixed up in the igul, and we don't know where it is in the igul. On the other hand, the Shitimiku Bezip Ot Aleph brings an alternate girsa over here, which is more akin to the girsa of this Gemara in Beitza, where the Gemara looks at this as being language from the Braita, and then makes an emendation to that to make it fit in. In that emendation, there are Rishunim in Beitza, like the Rabbeinu Hananel, who want to suggest that they don't give up the first line of the Braita, they're just adding on, which means now there's actually a sfeik over here. You don't know which igul it was pressed into, and even in that igul, you don't know where in the igul it is. And that's the sfeik sveika, because there's two problems here. One is you don't know which igul. Even if you knew which igul, you don't know where in that igul. And that's the sfeik sveika. Suppose the Rashi's reading of it, but there's only one sfeik here. It's just a different type of sfeik. The sfeik before was on the top, so there was a distinct item that you had a sfeik about. Whereas here, we're talking about where it's down below and it's pressed in amongst other items. It's only in one igul. You might even know which igul it is. But since it's pressed in there, you can't identify it. It's no longer separate and identifiable. It's batel there, even according to Rabbi Yeshua. So there's only one safek, but the nature of the safek is different. And that's the difference between Rashi's reading over here and the girsa that we have in our Gemara here, versus the girsa that Shita Mekubetzet brings. Now that can be read like Rashi as well, but there are Rishonim in Beitza that read it slightly differently and say that that adds an additional dimension of safek and makes it into a safek here. And that's why Rabbi Yeshua agrees. Whereas for Rashi, even in a single safek, Rabbi Yeshua will agree, it's just a different type of safek than the safek that we spoke about before. And that's different between Dafka Nakat Yireit, the highest of it that is visible and discernible. It's over here, where Hov Aletli Surei Veinei, you can't see or identify the Isur anymore. And therefore, it's not called the Davar Shemiminyan. Over here, the Balei Tosfot ask a question, but that question can really be parlayed into a more fundamental question, and the answer that they give will be also applicable in that way. They ask the question, which is particular to this Braita over here, which is Tema, the Reish Lakish. The Reish Lakish before, if you assume that Reish Lakish was defining Rabbi Meir's position, again, we spoke about that yesterday, are Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish arguing within Rabbi Meir? Are they arguing within the Chachamim? It's clear from the Balei Tosfot over here that they're arguing within Rabbi Meir based on his question that he asked over here. If they're arguing within the Chachamim, his whole question falls away, but then you might still have the other fundamental question, which we'll explain in a second. But Tema, The Reish Lakish Tamar Leil Gavi Chadlei Batan, the Rebbe Meir Kosher Darko, Kasha the Rebbe Meir Gufei Kasavar the Litra Ketziot B'Teila. Over here, according to the way the Rebbe Meir is explaining Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yeshua over here, he's suggesting that Rebbe Yeshua and Rebbe Eliezer believe that there is Bitul over here, even though this is Kol Shedarko Limanot. Even this is a Kol Shedarko Limanot, and therefore it's Chashuv and it shouldn't even be Batel. That's the way he explained Rebbe Meir in the Tiltan. Then how come over here, Rebbe Meir is explaining Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yeshua and saying that it can be Batel? If you agree that it's Kol Shedarko Limanot up here, and despite that fact, Rebbe Meir is saying it's Batel. How do you differentiate between these two cases? That's the way that Tosafot phrases the question. The question could be asked more fundamentally is, according to Rebbe Meir, who says that Rebbe Eliezer says we look at them as if they are nifradot or prudot, and we allow that which is on top, nit batel, I say that which is down below, why should you allow that? Why do we allow for this to be done in that way? Spatamet suggests it's a case where you pushed all the tops into the bottom. But then you're being mifatel and isur lechatfila, which is not allowed. But the Spatamet says the same reason, and Tosafot's going to give the answer here, you can also be mifatel isur lechatfila. But assuming that he didn't do that, how can you even suggest, like Rebbe Eliezer, according to Rebbe Meir over here, that the ones below should affect the ones on top, even though they're totally separate? So Tosafot, in answering the question here, to reconcile Rebbe Meir here, versus Rebbe Meir by Chavilei Tiltan, which was Kilei Akerem, versus Truma over here, he says that Kol Shedarko Mekadesh Elishma Doraita. Rebbe Meir's opinion back there, where Reish Lakish was explaining it, was dealing with Truma Doraita, Kilei Akerem Doraita, Orla Doraita. Aval B'Truma B'Zman Hazeh, which is the Rabbanon, he would not say it. So Tosafot makes a distinction between Dinim Deoraita, which are mentioned in that previous Mishnah that we quoted, where Reish Lakish was defining Rebbe Meir, and Rebbe Meir over here, where he's dealing with an Isur Dirabbanan. Now, even though we had a preface to this, that the Gemara thought that it made no difference, that it was true by Isurei Dirabbanan and Isurei Deoraita, nevertheless, that is the distinction that Tosafot makes. But then he's perplexed by this, because if you say that Truma B'Zman Hazeh is the Rabbanan, that means you believe that Kedushat Ha'aretz is not permanent. If Kedushat Ha'aretz is not permanent, then why is Kilei Akerem still a problem? Kilei Akerem should also be the Rabbanan. If there's no Kedushat Ha'aretz, then there's no Kilei Akerem. Now, there's an underlying assumption there that Kilei Akerem is connected to the Kedushat Ha'aretz, and may not be independent, may not even be a mitzvah to Liyab Haaretz, because we know that has impact even in Chutz Laaretz, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. So maybe there isn't a din of Tluyab Haaretz. But assuming, like Bali Tosafot, that it's Tluyab Haaretz, if you say Shuma B'Zman Hazeh D'Rabbanon, then Kilei Akerem is also B'Zman Hazeh D'Rabbanon. So the Bali Tosafot answer, Be'esh Lomar, that Kilei Akerem is D'Achad D'Rabbanon. It's only one din D'Rabbanon. Meaning, if it was the time of the Kedushat Haaretz, and the Haaretz was Kedusha, then it would be that Kilei Akerem is Doraita. But by the Teinim, the figs over here, even if we were in the Zman that there was Kedushat Haaretz, still they're only fruits. And the only thing that's Chayav and Shumami Doraita is Dagan, Tirosh, V'Yitzhar. Grains, oil, and wine. Those are the three things that are Chayav Midoraita in Shuma. Fruits, according to most Rishonim, and here according to Bali Tosafot, only a Din Derabbanan. And so therefore it's a double Derabbanan. Truma B'Zman Hazeh is a double Derabbanan. Kilei Akerem is only a single Derabbanan. And for that reason, he says, there's a distinction made over here. That over here, we're much more mekil and allow you to be mevatel it, according to Spatamet, even the Chatzilah. Or, according to the way that you simply read Rebbe Meir's view of Rebbe Eliezer, we allow you to take a bigger perspective of what is mevatel it over here. Whereas by Kilei Akerem, which is only a one Derabbanan, because today, Kedushat Haaretz is no longer extant, over there we would say that it is still a sur, and we don't have any of kulot that are associated over here. So again, Tosafot does it to answer the specific question about Rebbe Meir here versus Rebbe Meir there, but you could also look at it to answer the more fundamental question, how are we allowing, in Rebbe Eliezer's opinion, such a concept to mix those on top and the bottom when they really aren't mixed together? The answer is that we're mekil over here because we're dealing with Truma D'Rabbanan, and according to the Bali Tosafot, it's even double Truma D'Rabbanan, because it's Truma B'Zman Hazeh when there's no Kedushat Haaretz, and it's Truma Peirot, which is also D'Rabbanan, so that double D'Rabbanan gives us latitude to be more mekil over here. But then the Bali Tosafot goes on to then to discuss, based on his premise here, that there's no Kedushat Haaretz, how do you deal with Rabbi Yeshua's opinion? Rabbi Yeshua's also a little mekil over here. How is he mekil in this situation? Is if that's true only because Kedushat Haaretz is Mid D'Rabbanan, we know that Rabbi Yeshua's position is that the Kedushat HaMikdash is permanent because of the fact that he says in the Gemara Megillah, you can be makriv korbanot, even though there are no walls, even though there's no Mishkan or Mikdash there. that indicates that Kedusha Rishona was Kedusha L'Hashata Ulati Lavo. So the answer that the Baitos will give here is reference you back to the Bali of Tosafot earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Samach Aleph, where we discussed the issue of Kedushat Haaretz, where they said you can bifurcate the din between Kedushat Mikdash and Kedushat Haaretz. And therefore, what Rabbi Yeshua will hold is that Kedushat Mikdash is permanent and something that stayed, but that doesn't mean that Kedushat Haaretz stayed. And therefore, even according to Rabbi Yeshua, over here we're talking about Truma Midrabanan. Even though, again, he could have just done that at the level of the Rabbanan, because Te'inim are only Truma Midrabanan, the Baal Tosafot at first make that suggestion, but then back away from it because we find other places that even Truma Derabanan, we don't allow for these kulot. So therefore, he needs to find a double Derabanan in order to allow for these kulot. And that would have to be, number one, that Kedushat Haaretz is not permanent. Number two is that we're speaking about Truma Derabanan, because we're speaking about Te'inim. That's a very important issue as to why we're Mekil over here, as well as to explain or reconcile Rabbi Meir here with the Rabbi Meir before. In addition, the Baal Tosafot then spent a very long time on Rabbi Yehuda's position over here, because Rabbi Yehuda we're going to bump into later in the Masechta says, min b'mino enu batel. And when something is the same min, it's not batel. And therefore over here, how does he have min b'mino be batel according to Rabbi Meir's view? Because it's min b'mino. Or even according to Rabbi Yehuda's view, why is he saying that it's because it's a davar b'minyan? It should be a problem just because it's min b'mino. Min b'mino is not batel. So Rabbeinu Tam gives a big chiddush in saying that when Rabbi Yehuda says min b'mino is enu batel, is only when we're speaking about davar lach. When we're talking about liquids, or items that mix very well together. Then we say min b'mino is not batel. But things that are yavesh, distinct or separate, even if min b'mino, Rabbi Yehuda would agree, it has the same status as min she'enu mino, and it can be batel. So that's Rabbi Tam's way to solve the problem. The Baal Tosafot then bring a number of occurrences in Shas that are, number one, supportive, and then after that, that are problematic for the Rabbi Tam. And each one of them he tries to answer on behalf of the Rabbi Tam, then rejects the Rabbeinu Tam, and then tries to go back again and try a number of times to reconcile this Rabbeinu Tam. In order to explain over here why Rabbi Yehuda believes, even though it's min b'mino, it's still batel. So then, Rav Ashi Amar, afilu teimer rabbonon. So as opposed to the suggestion of the Gemara, which said, Amar Papa hai tano, the tano over here is tana de litra k'tziot. And that's how we're going to solve the problem, that our mission is authored by this tana, who says that anything that is enumerated is not batel, and that explains who the author of our Mishnah in Zvachim is. Never, the along comes Rav Ashi and says, "Afilu teimer rabbanan." Even the rabbanan in Mishnah in Urla who argued on Rabbi Meir, even for them we could say this. Now, if you could say it for them, then obviously you can also say it for Rabbi Yochanan's view within Rabbi Meir, because the rabbanan are a more extreme view of that. Or if you believe that Rabbi Yochanan Shlokhs were explaining the rabbanan, you could say "Afilu teimer rabbanan" means that for Rabbi Yochanan it doesn't have to be Rabbi Meir, or have to be someone, Batana Litrot, that is the author of our Mishnah over here. It can even be the Rabbanan that he explained to say that only things that are only sold by number are considered to be Chashuv and not Batel. Even so, they will agree to the din in our Mishnah because Balei Chaim Chashive Velo Batle. Balei Chaim, live animals, are considered to be so significant they are not Batel. There's a uniqueness about animals that are alive, that are moving around. That's not true of Shchutim. If they were already Shechted, they wouldn't have this status. But it's a unique standing of live animals that they are so Chashuv or so significant that even the Rabbonan, who have the Shishat Varim before, would agree that they are not Batel. Or according to Rabbi Yochanan, either if he's saying this in Rabbi Meir or in the Rabbonan's position, would say or agree that even though it's not something that's solely or uniquely sold by number, nevertheless, they have significance as being a live being. And because of that, they're not batel. And that will explain our Mishnah. Why are they not batelim in our Mishnah? Because they're bad animals. Live animals just are things that are so significant they are not batel. So now the Gemara takes a step back and says something that is a very fundamental question, but raises a lot of issues that are about bitul. And that is, v'nimshok, let us go ahead now and pull one of the animals out of the group, v'nikrav chadminayu, and then we'll put one of them on mizbeach. V'neima, and say, called the parish, mirubach parish. Anything that separates away from the group comes from the statistical sample. Meaning that if you have a group of items there, when you take one out of that sample group, we assume that it is governed by the rules, the majority that are there. And so too over here, we're going to say the same thing. You have a group of animals. There's one of them that's a shorni scholar, chashata meita. There's another 10,000 of them that are chulin, or that are kodashim. So you'll go out, pick one animal, pull it out, and say, Well, what's the status of this animal? Well, what do you think the status of that animal is? On the majority, a la robe, it's going to be from whatever was the majority in this sample set. And therefore, you'll follow the robe. So that's the suggestion of the Gemara over here. Why have they up the old guy? Why don't we just take them out one by one? And anything that you take out, consider to have come from the majority. The Gemara says, Nimshok, how could you pull it away from that? Havalu kavua. That is something that's fixed in place. The kol kavua, kemeksa meksa domi. Anything that's fixed in place is considered to be a 50-50 shot. So now, this goes back to Gemarot that we saw in Sanhedrin, as well as in Psachim. With regards to what's the difference that are called the parish meruba kol parish, when do we say or when do we invoke the principle when something moves away from a group that we classify it as being coming from the robe of the sample set? Or when do we say that when you go into a sample set, we look at it as being a 50-50 shot? So the Gemara over there explains the difference. The example that's brought in the Gemara Pesachim is in a case where you find meat on the street of a city. Now, there are 9 kosher butcher shops in the city, and there's 1 non-kosher butcher shop in the city. In that case, we will assume that the meat came from the kosher butcher shop. Gzala Rov, the majority of butcher shops in the city are kosher butcher shops. The meat that's sitting out here, assume that Parish, it left from one of the stores. We have no idea which store. We have no idea how it got there. But we can assume it came from one of the stores. And the majority of the stores are kosher stores. So we would assume that the meat is kosher and you could eat it without any problem. On the other hand, if someone purchased meat from the store and they have no idea which store they bought it from, but there are 9 kosher stores, 1 non-kosher store. So why don't we there invoke the same principle and say, kol deparish meruba kaparish, that whatever leaves from the majority, and if he purchased it from a store, he probably purchased it from a kosher store. There the Gemara says it's kikavua. Since the isur is in place, meaning that you took it from a butcher shop, and a butcher shop doesn't move around, it's not something where you're pulling it out of the majority, it's something that's stationary, static, fixed in place. And therefore we view it as kikavua kemeksa meksadomi. We view it as a 50-50 shot. Now, truthfully, in terms of statistics and probability, it should make no difference. And it should make no difference whether you have meat that is found out on the street. The probability of it coming from a kosher store is 90%. Versus if you bought meat from one of the stores and you know which store it is, again, there's a 90% shot. Assuming that you have no biases and there's no reason that you would have gone to one over the other, then it should also be a 90% shot that the meat that you bought is a kosher piece of meat. Nevertheless, there is a din min haTorah. This is a Torah principle. That whenever it's kavua, whenever the isur is kavua, and we're going to get more information about that in a second, what it means to be kavua, then it's meksa meksa. We view it as being like 50-50. For instance, in the case where a person throws a stone into a group of individuals, some of whom are Jewish, some of whom are not, over there we classify it as being a 50-50 shot, and we don't go batra aruba, we don't go after the robe over there, because they are fixed in place, they are kavua, they are not moving. Now then, if one person walks away from that group, then we would say, kol barish meruba kol barish, and you can assume that person was not Jewish who walked away from the group because he left the sample set. That's the principle that the Gemara is invoking over here. And they're saying the same thing over here. With regards to the animals, if you pull an animal out, you're right, kol deparish meruba kol parish. But the animal didn't leave by itself. You pulled it out of the group or the sample set. When you did that, you took it from something that was kavua. You have animals that are in place in a fixed location, and now you're pulling one of those animals out. When you pull one of the animals out, that's like you took it from the store, one of the butcher stores, or in the case where you throw the stone into a group of people, over there we view it as kemeksa meksa dummy. So the whole idea of it being called the parish, rubical parish, helping you over here, it's not going to help you, because here it's going to be viewed kemeksa al meksa dummy. Where it says, the name Ella, nich vishinu denide. Let us pressure them to run away, to scatter, to 90, so that they'll move around. And then, name a kol deparish, meruba kol parish. Let us force them not to be static, stationary, to be in a fixed place. Let's force them to move. And then once they move, and then you take an animal, then it's kol deparish, meruba kol parish, because they're no longer in a fixed location. So now, that's a big problem, which all the Rishonim are trying to deal with over here, is why can you do this? Why are you allowed to change the status quo of the situation? We never say to you that you're allowed to be mevatel something in the chatkilo, or you can change its standing in order to cause it to be batel. So let's say here, with the meat, the person has the meat that they bought from one of the butcher shops, so let him throw it out onto the street, and then somebody will pick it up, and they'll say, oh, it came from the kosher stores. Why don't we use that as a solution, rather than saying it's kemeksa meksa and it's a problem? Why are we allowed over here to chase these animals out, in order for it now to change the status quo, from it being meksa meksa to being kol deparish, meruba kol parish? The Baal Tosfot would ask that question. Kogon shelo b'faneinu. It happened not in front of us. We did not see what happened. since we didn't see what happened, the change in status is something that happened, and we are not changing from Mexa Mexa to in Kol Minuva Parish, watching it happen, which means that it shouldn't have changed. No, we didn't see it happen. And when we didn't see it happen, now when we're returning to a situation that's completely different than it was before. If it happened in front of us, because if it happened in front of us, it would be no different than you pulling it out of the group that's in a kavua place, that's Mexa Mexa. Over here, it's a case where somebody scattered them, and now you're going to find them. And that's what explains that once they leave the place that they were in, they change from being kavua to being called the parish, miruba kol parish. He's trying to address the problem of how can we do this. The answer is it wasn't done in front of us. But who allowed someone else to do it? Or why are we doing this at all? Why is that allowed? If you look in the Shita Mekubetzet, he gives a little more flavor to what the Balei Tosfot is saying over here. The Shita Mekubetzet Nor Aleph enhances that what the Tosfot says and says, Ishlamar Dahaki Kamar, Deninai Dinu, Shalobi Fanenu, She Nesog Panenu Achor, Kedei Shaloni Remekan Perash. We're going to turn away and we're going to let them scatter. And once they've scattered, then we're going to re-engage with them. That's the way that he explains that the Nechbishinu is not that we force them to scatter, but we force ourselves to turn away. And in turning away and leave the animals to their own devices, they will scatter by themselves, and therefore they'll no longer be Kekabua. So that's how he helps to explain this Balei Tosafot as to why you're allowed to do this. But then he brings another reason, which is quoted in the subsequent Tosafot in another context, and will help us understand the meaning of the Gemara, which is he brings the Onirel Asar Mikutzi. He brings from the Sarmi Kutzi Damrinan, Tolochoshi Perish Miruba, Heched Parish Bifanenu Minhakviut. That's only when it comes away from something that is Kavua, Hainu, Davka de Heched Isur Yadua. That's only when the Isur is known, Umivurar, and is separate and distinct, Bimakom Kviato, in its placement. So again, going back to the story of the butcher shops, over there we know where the non-kosher butcher shop is. You know exactly which one it is. And you can define it, you can delineate it, you know where the Easter is. And similarly, when it comes to the problem of throwing it into a group of people, over there, the person is Jewish or non-Jewish, is identifiable. You just don't know because they're not visible to you at this time. But they're clearly and easily identifiable. That is not the case over here. Here we have 10,001 animals mixed together, and there's no way to tell which one of them is the Shor HaNiskal, or which one of them is the Chatat HaMeita. Versus the other. So yes, it's a kavua, but it's a different type of kavua. And through that, the Sarmi Kutzi now explains that there's a difference over here that allows us latitude in dealing with this. Normally in a kavua, the Isur is visible, distinct, and understood where it is. We just, for whatever reason, we're entering into a safek now. That safek makes it, it's kemeksa meksa dummy. Like for instance, you bought meat from one of the butcher shops. So that's what creates the safek. But in terms of which ones are kosher and which ones are not kosher, that's all easy, distinct, and clear where the Isser is and where the non-Isser is. Over here, we don't have that. We have them all together, so they are kavua, they're fixed in place, but the Isser itself is not identifiable, it is not delineated in any way, it's not segregated or separate in any way, because they're all mixed together without us being able to tell where the Isser is and what the Isser is. And that's what he says, of a hocha, she Isser eni yadua b'mkom kviyato, umishum chashivut balei chayim. And the only reason we don't say it's batel over here, that should make it batel, is because it's a bal chayim, and we're machmir because it's a bal chayim, lasotu ki yadua. Make it as if it's known here. Hilkach shayach lomar, kol parish, miruba kol parish, afagav de parish bifaneinu. Even if we pull it out in front of us, we cause them to scatter in front of us. Reino de night, they make views, and even though we see them in one location, in a static place, nevertheless, if we chase them away and make them move, even they know yodua and burari's road, since we have no idea where the Easter is. He makes a fundamental distinction in what is the kavua over here, and that's what allows us the latitude over here. Because normally the kavua is that the Easter is known, and that's why it's next to Amex. Over here, the Easter is not known. And had it been any other case, it would have been batel. Why it's not batel here is because we say it's a baal chai and it's kashuv. He says that baal chai being kashuv means that we make it as if it is kavua. But it's not kavua. It's as if it is kavua. Therefore, we allow you latitude to chase the animals away, or maybe even watch the animals scatter. And then after that, if you pull it or pluck it out from there, that would be fine, because we would classify it as called the parish, miruba koparish. Now, Amar Rava. So now Rava says, Gzeira Shema Yavo Yud Kohanim Bevatachat Vikarvu. The reason that it's a surah over here to do this and allow you to scatter them, either according to the Balei Tosfot, look away when they get scattered, or according to the Sarmi Kutzi, watch them get scattered, and then take them afterwards and have be called the Parish Meruba Kaparish, meaning that the Gemara accepts that would be a valid thing to do. Nevertheless, Rava says we don't allow it in this case because of Gzeira Shema Yavo Yud Kohanim. Maybe 10 Kohanim will come b'fat achad in one shot. V'karvu. And they'll put it on the Mizbeach. And here Rashi gives us a principle about called the Parish Mirubah. Called the Parish Mirubah means that the majority remains in the sample set. You pull something out of the sample set, and now you have one. The majority of that which remains behind is mutar. There's one thing that is asur. So what we say is now you have taken an object out of that sample set, and you say about that object, the sample that you've taken, it must be governed by the majority that's left behind. That assumes that there was a majority left behind. As long as there's a majority left behind, you can make that assumption. But if you take the majority out, and then you leave behind a minority, then that's a problem. So for instance, in this case, you have to assume here that if you're taking 10 out, Rava uses the number of 10 arbitrarily, but it means that 10 and what left behind is less than that amount. It means that you have 10 of them out. Now you want to say, out of these 10 came from the sample set that we had before. Sample set had how many in it? If it had 100, if it had 10,000 in it, then you're right. What you left behind, the majority are still mutar. Therefore, what I took out should be governed by the majority that's left behind. But in a case where there are only 5 left behind, 2 left behind, 8 left behind, then the majority of them have left the sample set. Now you're saying to me, okay, the number that I took should be governed by what's left behind. What's left behind is majority anymore, and therefore it can't govern. So that's what Rav is saying here. Our fear is that you will take 10 animals at once, and if you take 10 animals at once and put them on the Mizbeach, you're going to run into a problem because you're going to say it's governed by the majority. Majority is not there. It's not left behind. You have the majority, and therefore how could you now dictate about each one of them that it's governed by the majority? If you take them one at a time, it's fine. Each time you take one, there's still a majority left that are mutarim, and that goes all the way through. The only case where it may be a problem, according to this view, the last three or the last two would be problematic, because when you take out the last one, it's a 50-50 left behind, or if you take out the one of the last two, then there's nothing left behind. Could be mutar, could be not mutar. But at least until that point in time, it should be mutar. But when you take out all 10 at once, you don't have that situation. So I'm going to help me a rabban in the ropa, el miata, megisa, asira. Uh-oh. According to you, that means if a guy's sitting there mixing the blood so it doesn't coagulate, then that would be asur. What this person who's questioning Rava assume is that Rava said that you're not allowed to have 10 koanim, go ahead and be makriv it together. That means, or the assumption is, the problem is that they're bringing it on the Mizbeach all together, all 10 of them. Which would imply that if they took them one at a time, and then later came to put them on the Mizbeach all 10 at once, it'd be problematic. And that's the nature of his question. The guy's sitting there mixing the blood so it doesn't coagulate, and all the other koanim then catch up to him. And then at one time they all go and put the Zrika the Dam on the Mizbeach together. That's the problem. That implies that you could have an animal that was once mutar, because it's called a parish miruba kaparish. You took it out of the majority, and so therefore it's going to be governed by the majority that's left behind, and it was mutar. Then all of a sudden later on, you're going to tell me it's asur now, because now the 10 of you want to put it on the Mizbeach at the same time? Problematic. That means something could go from being mutar back to being asur. But she sees this as being ludicrous. Once something's mutar, it should be mutar. So then, how could you, Rova, explain to me that the guy's mixing it, that would cause a problem later on? So Rava said to him, you misunderstood. The problem here is not that 10 Kohanim come and put on the Mizbeach together at the same time. What I meant was 10 Kohanim take animals at the same time. And that's where the problem is. When they take it out of the flock together, that's where the issue is. Not later on when they all get together and do it at the same time. Once it leaves and then it's mutar legamre, and it will never go back. You look in the Shita Mekubetzet over here in Ot Gimel, he brings that machloket rishonim that we discussed before with regards to bitul. Once something is batel, does that mean it changes its color, its face forever, and it's completely mutar? From here, the Rav Mir Mirutenberg, and quoted by the Rosh, says that that is the case. What Rava just told you is eino kanami. Everybody agrees here that if the kohanim get back together afterwards, they can't change the fact that it was mutar in the first place, and therefore it can't go back to being asur. And that's what he says here in Ot Gimel. Klomar, kevin shepirshu atarovet kol echad bilvado. Once the mixture got split up, v'nit batel isuran, and it was already batel, mishom dazlin and batar rove. Now batel, because we go after the rove. Heyach yachzori pasel minha megis mikan amar Rabbi Meir Mirutenberg dechaticha she'ina ruya lihit kaveit. If it's not a significant piece of meat that you could serve before a king or special guests, so that it doesn't have significance in of itself, you have one non-kosher meat that got mixed up with two pieces of kosher meat. Shemutar lo kulan kulan ladam. One person can eat all three of them. Ulebashlam kulan b'gderachad. You can cook them all three together. The kevin eat the batel isur. Once the isur is gone, shuvenu chuzer. It's gone forever and can't make the thing asur again. Avo bish yadua shua isur sham. Even though you know one of the three for sure is not kosher. Nevertheless, bitul works, and bitul is what we call mitziu. It changes the facts on the ground. And it changes this item from being non-kosher meat into kosher meat. Kevan shitira Torah isur. Once the Torah tells you that the isur is no longer there, havi mamash keheter gemura. It's as if the heter is completely mutar. Meaning in mitziu, you change something from isur to heter, and it will never become isur again. Means you can do whatever you want with it. You treat it like kosher meat, the gamre. But then the Shittim Kubetzet brings an alternative view. The Yesh Shayu Osrim. There's some people who say it's asur. And basically what they say is that rov is not a change in the mitziyut, but rov is what we call birur. It's an ability to adjudicate the situation. I have to deal with the situation. How do I view the situation? I have here three pieces of meat. Two of them are kosher, one's not. So the majority are kosher. So if I look at the meat, I want to know what to do with it. Well, we're going to say it's considered kosher. If you take the first piece, if you take the second piece. Third piece, we're going to say you can't take that because we know one of them is asur. So you have to treat one of them like isur still, but the others, we're going to assume when you pulled them out, they were coming from the rove. And therefore, it gives you a way to deal with the situation. It's a way to adjudicate or manage the situation, but it doesn't change the facts on the ground. And there will always be an isur that's left behind. That machloket, the sad that says that it is permanently changed to heter, quote this sheet of rove over here, as proof to their position that it is batel de gamre. So here, Rava says that Eino Kanami, had it been that they were taken individually and then later on brought back together for all 10 of them to be brought on the Mizbeach at the same time, it would never go back to being asur because once het there, always het there. There are achronim that want to dismiss it and say that the proof from here is not so strong because once the animals have already all been designated to end up on the Mizbeach, they've lost their significance as being live animals because now they're all designated for the Mizbeach. And therefore, they don't have chashivut as balei chayim anymore. And since their chashivut is gone, that's why they're batel over here. So that's maybe a change in the status of the animal that actually contributes, and that's why it doesn't go back to being an isur. So then the Gemara asks about that. Basara kohenim bevadachat me'efshar. Since when is it possible that 10 kohenim are going to come and take 10 animals in one shot? Now, what's strange here is the Gemara didn't ask about that earlier on. And Rashi noted, efshar l'tzamtzem. You can do things perfectly at the same time. That means if you have 10 Kohanim trying to put something on the Mizbeach, they could all get it on the Mizbeach at the exact same time. How come the Gemara didn't ask over there? How could they do that, get all 10 of them together? Yet over here, when Rava says, oh, they all grabbed 10 of them at one shot, that's not possible. So Rashi explains the difference as being, in the case of the Haktara, there it is, everybody can wait, they can mix their blood, all get together and do the springing at once. Over here, after you've scattered the animals, they're running away, you have to go and grab an animal. It's not just like the animals are standing there and each one goes and holds an animal. They have to chase after an animal and grab one of the animals. You're not going to get 10 Kohanim that get exactly at the same time that they all grab the animals that were running away, and that was Beparish Mirubah at the exact same moment. That's just too hard. That reaches into the realm of impossibility. So Amar Rava, Rava says, Mishum Kavua. The answer in the end, what the Gzeira is, it's not a Gzeira because we're worried about 10 Kohanim coming taking it at once. Rather, the Gzeira is Mishum Kavua, which is that Rashi says over here, Dilma Ati the Mimshach, we're worried about the fact that they will come and take them one-one without moving them. And if you had all the animals together and they were kavua, and you came to take one of them out, we said that's kemechsa mechsa. So our fear is if we let them scatter the group and then take one at a time, which would be mutar, the kol parish, miruba kol parish, over there, if we let them do that, they're also going to just do it without scattering the animals. And then it would be problematic because then you would be taking it away from something that is kavua. And when it's kavua, it is not called a parish, miruba koparish. Now, as to the extent of how far this gzeira goes, it's actually discussed by the very large Tosafot at the beginning of the perek, where the Rabbeinu Tam says about this gzeira of Rava, v'omer Rabbeinu Tam, u'matnitin d'hocha d'tani yamutu kulam b'nitarei v'zvachi mari u'legvoa, gzeira shem yavo yud kohanim b'vat achat, which is Rava's din, u'mesik min hakavua l'mizbeach. So he says that this din is only applicable by Kodoshim. Zev Kavua is only applicable by Kodoshim. It's not applicable by Chulin. And there the Rabbeinu Tam goes on to say, and we're matter them. Nevertheless, we still say, and he brings other examples whereby Chulin, we are matir these types of cases, and we don't have the Gzeir Rav of Kavua because it's uniquely associated with the din of Kodoshim. Although the Bali Tosafot bring from the Ri, who disagrees and thinks it has broader application, that this Isser of Kavua applies to any case where there's a situation in which the Kavua is not exactly Kavua as we explained before. And therefore, there's a suspicion that people are going to just take it directly from the Kavua and not go to the Parush. And therefore, it applies Ben Bechulin, Ben Bekodoshim. Tosfot says over here, it sounds from Rava that the problem is a Doraita problem. You have a Torah problem over here. Had they been stationary, it would have been a problem of Kavua, Kamechsa, Mechsadami, Midoraita, and it wouldn't have been a Kosher Korban. You couldn't do it. On the other hand, if it was Parush, meaning that you scattered them, and then you took one, it would be called the Parish, Miruba Kaparish, and it would have been Mutar Doraita. The Balei Tosfot says that's what it sounds like from Rava, but he says, Ef Shalom Arkein. You can't say this, because the Gemara is going to move on to other topics that they compare to this, and in those cases, we're saying that the Isur, or the Gzeira of Kavua, is only a Gzeira Midrabanan, and not a Gzeira Midoraita. And Tosfot here then invokes what the Shita Mekubetzet brought before, which is, why is this Kavua different? And that is, Elohainu Taimede Kilu, why were there abundant Mekil over here, that if you scattered it, then called the Parish, Miruba Kaparish, Yishum Di Midoraita, Batle Beruva. Over here, they should be Batle Berov. The Chol Mili Doraita, Beruba Batle. Anything that is a robe, Mina Torah, is Batel. Kevin Dulo Yedia, if you don't know where the Isur is. Vafilu Shisha Dvarim. Even the six things we mentioned in the Mishnah before that the Chamim said are not Batel, if you don't know where the Isur is, and Isur is not defined, then it's not. Machar Shnitarei Velo Yedia, if it's mixed in and you don't know exactly where the Isur is, then it is considered to be Batel Berov. V'chein Truma B'teila B'chad Meria, and similarly Truma will be 100 to 1. Velosha Kol Kavua, El B'davar HaYadua. Kol Kavua, like the Shita Megazet said before, is only relevant when it is a Davar HaYadua. By Isur Shalahem Yiduim Bimkomam. And the Isur is known in the place where they're located, that makes it into a Kavua. So over here, it's not a real Kavua. Since it's not a real Kavua, number one, above, we allowed you to scatter them, even though normally we don't allow you to do such a thing when you have a Kavua. And number two is over here, when Rava says it's Kavua, he's saying Midrabanan, we're going to be Gozer over here, be Kavua, to say it's like Kavua. Midoraita would not be considered Kavua, because the Isur is really not Kavua. It got mixed in. It's mixed in so well that we have no idea where the Isur is, and we don't know where the location of the Isur is. Not like the non-kosher butcher store where we do know where it is. And for that reason now, it's considered to be a Kavua Midrabanan that makes it Asur because these are Balei Chaim over here. But then we get the biggest Chiddush, which is Amar Rava Hashta Dami Rabbanan Lo Nakriv. Now that the Rabbanan say you're not allowed to put on the Mizbeach because of this Chashash of Kavua, Inakriv Lo Miratze. If you go ahead and put on the Mizbeach, it would not be Miratze. So that's a huge Chiddush, as the Shita Mekubetzet already notes. In Ovav, which is found in the Hashmatot, that which is left out at the end of the Masechta, he says, Mashma, the Tzarech Lavi Korban Acher. Based on Rova, statement over here, you'd have to bring another Korban. Beteima, the Rabbeinu Shmuel. Bechiesh Koach Biyad Chachamim, the Kor Davar Midoraita. Bekumbase. Are the Chachamim allowed to be Okir something in the Torah with an active transgression? Meaning that when it's a passive transgression, like not blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah of Shabbat, not taking the lulav on Sukkot of Shabbat, that's fine. That we know the Chachamim have. But how come over here they have the power to tell you to now bring a new animal as a Korban in the Mikdash when it's going to be Chulin in the Azara, Chulin in the Mikdash? You're already Yotze Midoraita with the first Korban you brought. The Chachamim took away that Kapara, and also now you have to bring a new Kapara and violate an Isur Doraita. The Hakamaiti Chulin Bazara, Bido Korban Shevi, Kemin Demaraita, Mitkaper Bekorban Shel Tarovit, Shikriv Kvar. So how could you do that? So here he brings two answers. One is Viteritzari. The case here is only a case where he brings something that is a voluntary offering, meaning that he brings an olah to replace the olah that was lost over there, and does it al tanai. Al tanai that if I need still to bring a kolah for kapar, I'll bring it. If not, this is going to be an idava to Hashem. This will be a voluntary offering, and that's how he gets around the problem. But the re is also mechadesh, so you can do that with a chatat. Not just with an olah, you can do it with a chatat, but we never find a voluntary offering by a chatat. So the re says, no problem, you just bring a chatat oof. Which we already discussed before, a chatat ha'ov can be brought ala safek. So he suggests that, you can bring the chatat ha'ov ala safek over here. On that, the Shita Mekubetzet says, Bekasha, how can you say that? There are certain korbanot that require a chatat ha'ov, fine. In those korbanot, you can say that. But what about a chatat of chaleb, a chatat of dam, where there's no option to bring a bird? How can you all of a sudden bring a bird instead of an animal and say, it's a voluntary offering? That doesn't work. So he gives a different answer, lekach nira, the Rabbeinu Manoach. That the answer here as to how the Chachamim can do this is, Kevin Sheba HaPsul Kodem Shchita, since this Psul, the problem arose before there was Shchita, Hefker Beitin HaYehefker, the Beitin has the right to disown you of your property, And in doing so, they took away your balut, your ownership over this animal. Therefore, when the animal goes on the Mizbeach, yeah, it's an animal, it's a korban going on the Mizbeach, but it's not your korban, it's not discharging your obligation, because you're no longer the ba'alim of this animal. They took away your ownership of the animal before the Shechita happened. And that's the way that the Rabbeinu Manoach solves the problem here, is how the Chachamim, the Oker, Davar Min HaTorah, Bikum Vaseh, he just says, you didn't fulfill your obligation before, because you didn't own the animal when it was brought, because Beit Din took away your ownership. Others suggest that once the Chachamim made it that this is not Batel, then the item becomes something that is of Isur, and we have a principle that you're not allowed to bring something on the Mizbeach that is Asur. That means because of the Pasuk in Yechezkel, which says, Mimashke Yisrael, that you have to bring something that could be consumed by Yisrael. If it can't be consumed by Yisrael, I mean it wouldn't be kosher for Yisrael, then it also wouldn't be kosher for the Mizbeach. And over here, where the Chachamim instituted that there is no Bitul over here, then it remains Asur. If it's Asur, it can't be placed on the Mizbeach. That's how they answer this issue over here. But it does go to a bigger question. When the Chachamim put limitations on a mitzvah, can they take away your right to do the mitzvah? And we find that question by Kriyat Shema. For instance, where the Chachamim say, don't say Kriyat Shema after Chatzot. Does that mean that you can no longer be Yotzei in the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema after Chatzot? The Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachot say, Einenu Chanami. The Chachamim were mafkir your right to do the mitzvah after Chatzot. Once they said it's no longer the time period to do it, they took away your right, even midoraita, to accomplish the mitzvah after Chatzot. And the Primi Godin in the Pticha Kolelet asked the same thing with more generally, but also with regards to the Sukkah. We have certain Gzerot Chachamim, where you put on boards in the Sukkah, which is Kosher Sechach midoraita, the Chachamim, because of Gzerot Binyan, don't allow you to put it on there. Do they mafkir your right to be Mekayim the mitzvah of Sukkah? And therefore, if you sat in there, you're not Mekayim the mitzvah. Or you Mekayim the mitzvah midoraita, but you just violated it in their Abonon. So that is a machloket that we'll see throughout the Rishonim, as to when the Chachamim do give a gzera, or they say that something can no longer be done properly in this way, what does that do to the mitzvah d'oraita? And over here you see the Shita Mikubetz, that assuming that that is suspending your right, based on what Rava says over here, to do the mitzvah, and then what right do they have to do that? And that's what they're trying to come up with, the mechanism to do that. Although again, the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah and the Primi Godin seem to say it, even without all this, that the Chachamim have a right to change the nature of the mitzvah and suspend your ability to do a mitzvah d'oraita, once they are magdir, that it's no longer the proper way to do it, it then takes away its shame as being the mitzvah that you're supposed to do. Okay, Eitvei Rav Huna Bar Yehuda the Rava. So now, Rav Huna Bar Yehuda comes and challenges Rava's concept here, that when the Chachamim say you're not supposed to do something, that suspends your right to be able to accomplish that mitzvah. Because, Chatat Shnitarva Be'ula. Here we're back to the Mishnayot in Kinin, where you have a bird that is a chatat that's mixed up with birds that were supposed to be brought as an olah. V'olah sh'nitarvah b'chatat. Or vice versa. You have an olah tov that got mixed up with a chatat tov. Afilu achat b'ribo. Even one in 10,000. Yamutu kulan. They're all put to death because we can't deal with the problem here. You can't do them all as olot because there's one chatat there. Can't do all of them as chatot because there's one olah there. That causes the problem. All of them have to go to die. B'med v'ar mamurim. When is that true? B'kohen nimlach. That's only if the kohen came and asked us the question. As the Baitos point out, this is not found in the Mishnah in Kinin, but later on, in the next parak, it says this, Bamed Vamim Murim, and what the Chachamim are doing here is saying that Bamed Vamim Murim is going on all the Mishnayot beforehand. And so they're just applying it specifically to this Mishnah, even though it's not written there on this Mishnah. That's if the Kohen came and asked us what to do, we tell him you can't do anything with this. Aval B'Kohen She'enu Nimlach, but if the Kohen never came and asked us the question, Asan Lamalo, if he did all of the birds above, Mechsa Kasher, Mechsa Pasul, half of them will be kshirim, half of them will be psulim, assuming that they were 50% olot, 50% chatot. Because all of them above, then all the olot are kshirim, the olat of, the chatat of is pasul, because it can't be done above the chutas sikra. Lamato, if he did all the birds below the chutas sikra, mechsa kasher, mechsa pasul, in the opposite way, all the chatot will be kshirot, whereas the olot will be psulot, because they were done below the chutas sikra. Achat lamato, v'achat lamalo, if he does half of them above, half of them below, then, shnehem psulot. We assume everything is pasul. Sheni omer, chata'at kreva lamalo. He ended up doing the chata'at up above. Ve'olah kreva lamata, and he did the olah down below. So now what you see from that Mishnah is, despite the fact that if you came and asked us the halachic question, we would tell you, you can't put these on the Mizbeach. So that sounds like the Chachamim would have suspended your right to do such. Yet when the Kohen goes and puts it on the Mizbeach, it works. How could that be? According to you, Rava, when the Chachamim tell you that you're not allowed to do this, or there's zera not to do this, that suspends your right to bring that korban. Over here, the individual is discharging their rights with regards to these kinim, and they won't have to bring whatever olot or chataot they were chayavin to bring if they needed these items. Whatever they needed will be discharged, at least what the kohen did, even though he did it improperly. So how do you reconcile? Ella, hakeman damar balei chayim nidachin, hakeman damar balei chayim einan nidachin. The answer is that it depends on how you view balei chayim, live animals. Once live animals have been suspended for their ability to do something, does that now take them away from the possibility of them being brought as a korban? So machloket that we saw earlier in the Masechta, it's also found in the Gemara and Masechet Yoma, as well as in other places, which is that everybody agrees, once the animals are shchutin, then there is a problem of balei chayim nidachim. We'll find one position that says otherwise. But everybody agrees, once they are already shchutin, then if something goes wrong with the korban that suspends its ability to be used, then if it comes kasher again, it's already nidach, it was pushed out, it can no longer be used as a korban. Now then, when the animal is still alive, because of the fact that that animal may not for certain end up on the mizbeach, there are some opinions that believe that it's not nidach. Because if it gets a moment, it could be exchanged out. If it gets lost, maybe it gets replaced. Since it's not guaranteed to end up on the mizbeach, when something goes wrong and suspends its ability to go on the mizbeach, after it becomes kasher again afterwards, it's not a problem. And that's what you have over here. Over here, the chachamim are suspending your ability to do something. They're telling you that because of what happened here, there was a mix of animals, a mix of birds that took place. Because of that, you can no longer bring a korban. That means the chachamim now suspended your ability to bring it. It's no longer kosher to bring as a korban. Then all of a sudden the kohen goes and does it anyway. He does it without permission, without asking, and we say it's a kosher korban. That's because it was originally good for a korban. Got mixed together, the chachamim say no good. And then the kohen goes and does it and makes it good again. So what it must be is that the opinion, the attribution of that Mishnah in Kinin is according to the Mandamar that Balei Chaim Einan Nidachim. The Balei Chaim cannot be pushed away, and as long as they're still alive, if they come back and Me'arroyu the Mizbeach, then they can be placed on the Mizbeach. But our case over here in the Mishnah, where you have the Zvachim, is according to Eitano, who believes that once they are suspended by the Chachamim, they can no longer be put on the Mizbeach because they are Nidachim, and they are permanently removed from their ability to put on the Mizbeach. And that's how you explain the difference between them. Mar says, wait a minute, Barei Shchutin, even by the case of Shkutim, do Kuliyama Nidachin. Everybody agrees that there's Dichui over there. It's non. And we have a Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar Omer, Im Kareva Rosh Shalachad Mehen. If you have a bunch of heads of animals, one of which was a problematic korban, and the remainder of which were kasher korbanot, and then the Kohen goes by accident, without asking, puts one of those heads. So you have nine that were kasherim, one that was pasul. That makes all the heads psulim, and you can't put them on the mizbeach. But then if a Kohen, by accident, or unknowingly, or unwittingly puts one of the heads on the Mizbeach, then we assume the one that he put on the Mizbeach was the Isor, and then he's allowed to put the remaining nine on the Mizbeach. But there again, you had a suspension of the right to put it on, because the Chachamim said, don't put it on anymore. And yet, if the Kohen goes and does it anyway, we say that he can go ahead afterwards. And there, everybody agrees by Shchutim, it has nothing to do with Balei Chaim Nidachim, and everybody agrees there's Nidach over there, and yet we're saying you can still do it. That seems to upend what you're saying, Rava, that when the Chachamim said it's suspended, or say you shouldn't do it, that means you're not allowed to do it. And it doesn't work? That's not true. Sounds like it still works, just the Chachamim said don't do it. If you do it, it will work. You'll just be violating an Isur. And even though, as the Baal Tosafot pointed out, the Chachamim there disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, but they disagree with Rabbi Eliezer for technical reasons that make them even more machmir than Rabbi Eliezer. So then you can't say, Rava, oh, I hold like the Chachamim, because if you hold like the Chachamim say that Rabbi Eliezer's premise is wrong, but they say that it is asur for other reasons. You're in the same boat as that opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Or the Shita Megubetzet notes over here that you can even say, Inami Hani Mili Chatkhila. When the Rabbanan say it's asur, that's only Chatkhila, but Bidiabad, it goes on the Mizbeach, lo yirid. You see, even according to the Chachamim, there's no Dechia over here, because otherwise it should come off the Mizbeach. So one of those reasons, he doesn't get any benefit by saying, I'm following the Chachamim and not Rabbi Eliezer. Or it says, Hudamar Kechanana Mitzri. That Rabbi Eliezer over there is following the position of Hanan HaMitzri, the Tanya, because we have in the case of the Shnei Seirim on Yom HaKippurim, the Tanya, Hanan HaMitzri Omer, afilu dam kos mevi chaviro mizaveglo. Even if the Seir and Seir Bifnim was already in a cup of blood, and somehow the Seir HaMishtalech died or something went wrong with it, so you would think now that you can't bring another pair and pair it up. Nevertheless, Hanan HaMitzri says, go ahead and pair it up. Even when the dam is in the kos, you can make them a pair and continue. So what's clear from Hanan HaMitzri is that even after the animal has died, it's still not considered to be nidach, and so therefore the kos stays in place, and you just bring a new animal in, and then you have a pair of seirim. So there's no nidach over here in the fact that one of the animals died. And given that, we found an author of that position of Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah about Karev HaRosh, that that would be according to those that believe that even after Shkutin, there is no din of Nidach. But if you hold of Nidachim, then Rabbi's din would be true, and that'd be the case in our Mishnah, that once the Chachamim say they suspend your right to do this, not only do they tell you it's asur to do it, they now take away your right to do it, and if you did it, it will not be successful at bringing a korban. Okay, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph.